Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @RedRock_bball, Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. Email is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out the YouTube page, which again doesn't have a real fancy link just yet, but you can find the link on the Twitter bio, on the website, and just go and search on YouTube for Red Rock or Fantasy Basketball and you should see the videos appearing there. And there will be a little bit of a, by the time you listen to this, a bit of a surprise video that I'm not covering in a podcast. Up on the YouTube site, just touching on some potential hidden gems. We're just talking about guys who excelled in their per minute stats. So check that out over on the YouTube channel. Today we're back with another in the season in review podcasts. Only two of them to go. So today I'm touching on the Cleveland Cavaliers. All the little kids growing up on the skills. Unfortunately for the Cavs fans, Cleveland did not rock enough in the NBA Finals, but still, for a team that had the number one pick in the draft for three out of the last four seasons since LeBron wasn't there, for them to be back and, you know, a real chance of capturing an NBA championship, and they're actually favorites to win next year's NBA championship, it's obviously a big turnaround, and it's obviously fueled by one man, LeBron James. But the acquisition of Kevin Love, Timofey Mozgov, J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, the elevation of the level of play of Kyrie Irving, all those things contributed to a massive turnaround from this team, and they were great. They were the class of the East, or the second half of the season. Definitely started off rocky, but that's you come to expect that with so many new pieces there. I don't imagine they're going to start off that rocky next season. I think that they should be in line to claim the number one seed next season in the Eastern Conference. But we're here to talk about them from a fantasy point of view and look at, a lot of that ties into real life production as well, but we'll focus a little bit more on the fantasy stuff, even though a lot of the questions that came through weren't necessarily fantasy related. And you know what? Let's cover one of them now. Jasmine Sierra, great Instagram contributor. She's at J Sierra_B on Instagram. Do you believe the Cavs would have beaten the Warriors if Love and Kyrie were healthy? If so, in how many games in the series? No, I don't think they would have beaten the Warriors. I think the Warriors still would have beaten them. It probably would have gone one extra game, but no, I think the Warriors still would have won, even if Kyrie and Kevin Love were there. The Warriors were the clear best team all season, irrespective of who was playing, you know, for the Cavs. The Cavs just weren't as good. The Warriors' season was that good. It was historically good. How good they were, their offense, their defense, their point differential. One of only three teams to ever win 83 games in a season, which they did. They were that good. So, yeah, it hurt the Cavs' chances not having those players out there. But I don't think that would have mattered, to be honest. I don't think that it would have added an extra game, I'm sure, and it maybe made the end result a little closer. But overall, I think that the Warriors still would have got the victory over the Cavs. Let's talk now about the point guard position and Kyrie Irving, who had a great season, actually stayed healthy until the playoffs, played 75 games, and was a star. He ended up the season as the 10th overall head-to-head player per game and in total value, 12th in roto leagues, and was pretty consistent all the way through, averaged 21.7 points, which is actually an increase on last season. So with Kevin Love arriving, with LeBron arriving, he increased his scoring, which is a fantastic effort. Hit over two threes a game, which is an increase as well. Dropped his assist, which was something we sort of anticipated with LeBron in town, but it wasn't a massive drop. He went from 6.1 to 5.2, so there was enough of a drop for it to be significant, but it wasn't huge. His steals stayed steady at 1.5. The big key with him, though, is his field goal percentage went from 43 to 47%, and that's huge. Less than one attempt less per game, but they're better shots, better looks that he's getting on the field. And that allowed him to convert at such a higher rate. No one would have picked Kyrie in the top 10. So if you didn't manage to pick him, which likely would have been in the 20s most probably, you got a huge result from him. The injury is a concern. He's got that fractured kneecap. He's going to miss a fair chunk of time. I don't think it really impacts him too much next season. for me, he's a pretty easy second round target. Now, I've probably said about 30 guys as second round targets over the course of these podcasts because I haven't gone through and given obviously projections for next season because we don't know where everything's going to fit. That'll happen quite a few months into the off season. But taking Kyrie Irving between picks 10 and 25 is pretty much a no brainer. And Kevin Love may or may not be back. We don't know at this stage. But regardless, Irving is going to put up numbers, and he's going to do a similar thing to what he did this season, which was it was pretty fantastic what he was able to provide. Let's talk the other point guard on this roster. Matthew Dellavedova, the guy who got, let's be honest, way more focused than he should have throughout the playoffs. Yeah, he was good in a couple of games. He was just brutal in others, and he's just not a great player. Now, he did average 21 minutes a game this season, which I think a lot of people would be a little bit surprised about him getting so many minutes, but it doesn't translate into fantasy success. Less than 5 points a game. He did hit a triple a game, which was okay. 3 assists is not terrible, but he shot 36% from the field. Actually shot 41 from three, so there's a little bit of an oddity there. 76 from the line gives you less than half a steal. For as you know, much as we talk about him as being a defender and someone had to just shut down players, the steal numbers aren't there, the block numbers out there, they aren't there. He was ranked 312th in head-to-head per game value. He's never going to be a player who's relevant in most fantasy leagues. We have to be talking very, very deep 30-team sort of leagues. He could sneak into the top 300, but I don't think he's getting anywhere past the top 250. He did play well. He definitely played well in the playoffs at times, but he's just not a reliable enough player. We look at the last month of the season, he was a lot better actually as well, 187th with his rank, but I don't think he's able to sustain that sort of production for a full season. So Matthew Dellavedova, the playoff breakout as such, it doesn't translate to regular season into fantasy value in my opinion. I don't think you want to be going out and grabbing him in a deeper league or, you know, getting him at the end of a 14-team league or anything like that. Shooting guards, J.R. Smith was rejuvenated in Cleveland. He was not very good in New York. I had big hopes for J.R. Smith this season. I thought he was a guy that 10 and 12 team leagues had to own, and by the end of the season, he was. He was 93rd in per game value, post All-Star 71, so that's a 20-spot jump. Definitely improved a lot. He gives you 12 points, but we hear about J.R. Smith, and I've said this a lot of times on the podcast as well. J.R. Smith, we know he's going out there. He's a chucker, but he gives you a lot in other areas, which I don't think a lot of people realize. He hit 2.3 triples a game, which is obviously fantastic, but he gives you 3 rebounds, almost 3 assists, over a steal a game. And they're numbers where you go, he's not Tim Hardaway, who goes out there and goes, okay, I'm going to hit 1.5 threes and give you 0.9 assists, 0.9 rebounds, 0.2 steals. Smith contributes in a lot of areas. The one steal is fantastic. The 3 assists are great. And the 3-pointers are obviously pretty good as well. He hit his threes at 38%. So it was a pretty good conversion rate for him there too. Now the shooting from the field was not ideal. 42% is not a great percentage, but he does make up for it in those other areas. And if you're building your team in the right way, there's a lot of use for J.R. Smith. Now, he said today that he's going to come out and he's going to decline his player option for this season or this next season coming, but he does want to remain in Cleveland. That's the city I'm talking about. So, yeah, he does want to remain in Cleveland. So, likelihood he'll be back there. And the majority of this team will stay relatively intact, and I think they need to. Other shooting guards on this roster, Iman Shumpert came across in that same trade with J.R. Smith. He's nowhere near the fantasy factor that Smith is. He's still an okay sort of player at times. He started off the season ridiculously hot in New York, got injured, and is never the same since. He ended up averaging 25 minutes a game, but just 8 points, 1.1 threes, but 3.6 assists, 3.6 rebounds, sorry, 2.2 assists, 1.3 steals, which is where his value is. 41 and 67 is percentages. They're just not great. He was 173rd in head-to-head value for the season. 160th post All-Star break. Just was never. He's never going to be a 10-team standard guy that you have to own. He's never going to be a 12-team league guy that has to be drafted and has to be owned. And I think the same thing is going to hold true next season. He'll play and he'll be useful at times. He'll get hot, but he's not going to be someone that I've got to draft him inside the top 100. I've got to make sure we hold on to Iman Shumpert. He'll be used at times. And there'll be other times when he's just not as valuable. Now, he's a restricted free agent, so what they do with his contract is, you know, still up in the air. You'd imagine they would try to keep him on Shumpert, but he was the main piece in that trade that they wanted. So I think that Shumpert will be back next season. I guess it depends on what sort of other offers he gets. And the same with Dellavedova. He's a restricted free agent as well. He may have made himself a little bit of extra money in this postseason, but I still think the Cavs, they may try to keep him depending on what sort of offer he gets. If someone goes out and offers him $5 million a year, that is ludicrous, and the Cavs would be stupid to try and match that. But I think they'd like to bring a lot of these guys back. Joe Harris was a second-round rookie for the Cavs this season. His fantasy value not ideal, 435th per game. Didn't end up playing a lot. There was a stage early in the season when we hear these whispers that Joe Harris is going to be our starting shooting guard. This was before the J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert trade, and a lot of people going, we need to look at Harris in our leagues, but he didn't end up doing anything. He was not great. Averages 10 minutes a game, 2.7 points, not a lot of anything. Poor percentages, which we come to expect from a rookie, less than a rebound, half an assist, 0.1 steals. Not numbers that are very enticing at all. And even his per 36 numbers don't look that great. Under 10 points. 2.3 threes is good. 3 rebounds, less than 2 assists, half a steal. Just not great numbers from Joe Harris. He definitely has the talent to develop, and I do like him long term. I think that he sort of sits in that in the bit of a backup role. So instead of playing 10 minutes a night, we might see him at 12 or 15 minutes a night next season. Because guys like Mike Miller may not be there. Shumpert might not be there. Dellavedova might not be there. But I think Harris can develop into a better player. But not enough, I think, to be cracking the top 300 for any sort of format next season. Let's talk Mike Miller, who shockingly is still in the league, or was still in the league last season. He's got a player option for next season. You'd think he'd take that, so you'd think he'd be still around. But 413th in per game value, that's not great. He played 52 games, 14 minutes a game, and averaged 2 points and 0.6 three-pointers. At this point, I think the Cavs would be better getting the minutes into Harris and letting him develop. I know Miller's got leadership, and look, he played some pretty key roles in the playoffs when they were so banged up, but he's going to be another year older. He shot only 33% from the field during the season. He was only 33% from three as well, which is where his main calling card is. There's not a lot to like with Mike Miller for fantasy. One thing's for sure, he's not going to get better at this point in his career. Small forward, LeBron. We know that LeBron makes this team tick. We know that LeBron makes the league tick. From a fantasy point of view, he was disappointing. Before we get into that, though, there's a couple of questions that came in here about LeBron. Of course, we've got one from Barry Baker. Josh, how many years has James got in him to perform as he did in the finals? And when is the right time to trade him? Barry, I'm assuming you're talking about a dynasty league there. He's just over 30, so he's probably got another couple, three years maybe at that level, but he now couldn't sustain that performance through the playoffs, you know, much longer. He was clearly gassed by the end. He was really struggling, and the fact that he was still putting up those big, big numbers when there was no one else around is a testament to him as a basketball player. But if that series had gone to Game 7, I think he would have been struggling tremendously to put up anywhere near those numbers in those sort of minutes. I don't think we look to trade James next season in a dynasty league. I don't think his value is going to be dropping that much for the next 2 to 3 seasons. So I think you've got a fair amount of time of pretty elite production from LeBron left, Barry. Midnight Walker asks, who's at King Midnight 60, who do you think they could bring in to help put points on the board to consistently help LeBron? I don't think they need to bring anyone in, because you know who they bring back? Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. That's who they bring back to help LeBron put points on the board. You can't expect, you know, injuries to your second and third best player to happen all the time. So if he's got those guys there, there's the help. I don't think they're going to be able to attract many big-name guys in free agency because of the cap space issue. If they bring Kevin Love back at a max deal, they've got Kyrie at a big deal, they've got LeBron at a big deal, I don't think they're going to be, you know, out there getting these other big-name players. Like, they're not going to be targeting LaMarcus Aldridge or Marc Gasol. I'm sure they'd love them, but I don't think they're going to be targeting them if Love comes back. So the guys they're going to bring back to help put points on the board is Irving and James. And like they did during the season, not Irving and James, Irving and Love, like they did during the season, they'll help him. They'll ease a load on LeBron. And the fact that Kyrie played so well is one of the reasons that LeBron's numbers were a little bit down this season from what we expect from him. He was a consensus, you know, top 2 pick for the last few years. I didn't have him that high this season. I had him, I think, at 3 or 4. I'd have to go back and look. but he fell down to the number 8th player in per-game head-to-head value. He was 11th in total value, 6th in roto total value, so really good in rotisserie leagues, which is not something that he usually is quite as good at, but the numbers just, they weren't the same. And the big part of that for him in terms of losing his value was his field goal percentage, which dropped significantly. He was at 57% his last season in Miami, down to 49. Now, 49% is still good, but his value at 17.5 shot attempts at 57% from the field was that good. It could carry your field goal percentage. It could carry some chuckers on your team. But if he's shooting 49% at 18.5, which is what he did last season, that doesn't carry anybody. And it's a complete drop in his value. His scoring dropped by 2 points a game. Fine. That's shooting wise. His free throw percentage dropped as well. His 3-point percentage dropped also. His shooting was just off. Everything else was fine. Yeah, his rebounds were dropped from 6.9 to 6.1. His assists rose to 7.4. His steals were the same. He actually blocked more shots back to what he normally does. Like that 0.3 that he had in his last year in Miami was probably an anomaly of the years before that, 0.9, 0.8, 0.6. And he had 0.7 this season. And that's what you expect from him, just a bit over half a block a game. But the thing that really affected him with his shooting, and it wasn't isolated, it was all season long, and it just got worse and worse. And in the playoffs, his shooting was terrible. Maybe, I'm going to say there's a partial decline in LeBron. There is a little bit of a decline in LeBron, a little bit. And it's that ability for him to finish at the rim. He just doesn't, look, he gets to the rim and layups don't go in anymore. Before, they were almost guaranteed to go in. Every time LeBron would get to the rim, and that's what people would say, LeBron, you're the most dominant, overpowering athlete in the game. You can get to the rim when you want and it goes in. Just do it every time. Well, even if he does it now, it doesn't go in. And that's what caused that big drop in field goal percentage, that almost 9% drop in his field goal percentage, because his shots at the rim just weren't falling. And that affects his other things. It affects his scoring as well. Now, where do we take LeBron next season? It's hard to let him slip outside the top five. You've got Davis, Harden, Curry as the top three guys. And then you've got a mixture of Durant, Paul, LeBron, Westbrook is probably the next level of guys. Boogie Cousins, anyone in that range, it's okay to take him. It's hard to see LeBron slip past pick four. It'd be even harder if you had pick six to let LeBron go past. But based on the numbers, he was the 8th ranked player, which is not horrible, but it's not 4th. I think that he has a little bit of a bounce back with that field goal percentage. Maybe not back to Miami levels, but a little bit of a bounce back. But I don't think that I would take him inside the top five. I reckon I would rather grab KD and Cousins, assuming we know more about KD's foot, or Westbrook or Chris Paul ahead of him. I could have him ranked as low as 8th on my board, but it's still a really hard choice to let LeBron pass when it's your turn to pick in that middle of the first round. LeBron's backups, not a huge amount to talk about there. We saw Shumpert and J.R. Smith playing some of that role. James Jones, a guy who played a lot more minutes in the finals than probably he should have, but obviously that's to do with injuries to other players. He only played 12 minutes a game during the regular season. He hit over a three a game, and that's where his value is, 4.4 points and nothing else. He's a three-point guy, and that's fine if he's going to be a three-point guy, and you take that into consideration when you're looking at your fantasy team. You need someone who's going to hit three-pointers. Well, James Jones can be that player. Now, said he did pick up his game in the playoffs in terms of minutes played, and his production was a little better, but it was never enough where we go, this is, James Jones has turned it around. He's still only averaged 4.4 points a game. That's not great. He still hit 1.1 triples a game. It was basically the same sort of numbers. It just felt like he was playing more minutes, 16 minutes a game. So not a big jump. He was just more prominent. He was out on the court more. He was in your face, in your collective conscience a little bit more, but his production wasn't there. Now, his value at 374th per game, there's not going to be much reason for that to change. Sean Marion came across late in the free agency process, but he played zero role down the stretch for this team. Couldn't get off the bench. He was 311th in per game value. That's a massive decrease from what he did in his last season in Dallas, where he was a really valuable player. Is his career at the crossroads? You'd have to say it's pretty close to that. Now he's going to be a free agent this season. We don't know exactly what he's going to do. Is he going to retire? Is he going to come back, go to a different team? But his numbers just weren't great. He dropped every single category, basically. He went down from 32 minutes a game to 19, so that's a big part of it, but just a huge drop-off from Sean Marin. And he's not returning to those Dallas numbers. He's not becoming a top 250 player. He was a guy who was a top 100 player last season. It was a big, precipitous drop for Sean Marin, and it's not going to bounce back. Let's talk big men. Let's talk Kevin Love, who was, from a fantasy point of view, horrible. A real disappointment. We thought he'd have a drop off. He did, but not as big as what actually happened. He ended up playing 75 games at 34 minutes in the regular season. We all know what happened in the playoffs with that shoulder. We all know what's coming up for him with his impending free agency. But let's look at his numbers. He averaged 16.5 points. That's a drop of 10 points a game. Almost 2 threes. That's a drop as well. 9.7 rebounds. A drop. 2.2 assists. That's half his assists from last season. He's not a guy who gets blocks and steals, although he got them in the same proportions that he got them in Minnesota. Field goal percentage from 46 to 43. Free throws from 82 to 80. Three-pointers from 38 to 37. Just a drop in his production all across the board. Now, he didn't have to do as much as what he did in Minnesota, but at times it was like, what's happening here with Kevin Love? He's getting benched for stretches. He's not playing because of his poor defense. It wasn't an ideal fit, and that's led to a lot of talk about Love, you know, looking to move on to a different team, and that could definitely happen. We have no idea at this point. Wherever he goes, he's going to be a pretty solid guy. Now, he ranked as 50th in head-to-head value per game. I think that if he goes to any other team, it can only improve his situation. If he goes to a crap team like the Lakers, we're back to Kevin Love being a top 10 player. I almost got zero doubt about that. But on a team where he's got to share it with LeBron, he's got to share it with Kyrie, there are other guys, defensive players like Tristan Thompson around, Timofey Mozgov around, the return of Anderson Varejao who can play defense as well. It's going to impact his numbers. And if he stays in Cleveland, it's going to be hard to recommend taking Kevin Love inside the top 20. But I think that a good spot for him is probably inside that top 35. As I said, that the top 50 per game value is not ideal, and it is a little bit of a risk taking him inside the top 30, but it's not completely horrible because he could have a bounce back again in a situation where he's playing a bit more comfortably, a bit more used to things. Maybe he not wakes up or wakes up is not the right thing to say. Maybe he has a bit of a realization, I need to do this on defense, I need to do that. He's going to stay out in the field a little bit more. There's some things that can turn around. I think that if you end up getting him around pick 50, it could be a pretty big bargain for Love, assuming he stays in Cleveland. If he goes anywhere else, I think the numbers rise, and we're talking about back to it being a top 10 talent. Now, Tristan Thompson really impressed me this season. I didn't think he was that good a player, but he was great. He was fantastic in the playoffs. Now, he is a restricted free agent. The Cavs are going to want to bring him back. I'm sure of that. We know of the situation with him and just sharing the agent with LeBron. That could be a factor. But apart from that being a factor, the fact that he played well. He put up good numbers. He was really solid in the playoffs. He averaged 8 boards a game in his 27 minutes, 8.5 points, 0.7 blocks, and a 55% field goal percentage. That's not a great sort of situation for fantasy leagues. 187th in per game value. But if you're in that point where someone was out, say a center was out or Love was out and he was going to start, you knew that there was pretty much a guaranteed double-double with 1 to 2 blocks and solid percentages from Thompson. And you knew that was going to happen. So in a situation where Love leaves and maybe no one comes in to replace him, maybe Thompson goes back and starts and goes and gets 12 to 13 rebounds a game, which is a big possibility. All he's going to do is score on putbacks and give you that big field goal percentage, but he's going to block shots and he's going to be a defensive presence for this team. So if Love leaves, Thompson gets a bit of a jump up in his fantasy value. Otherwise, he's just a guy to sort of stream in most standard leagues when an injury occurs, or if you're really looking for someone, I need to get 7 rebounds, I need to get 8 rebounds. Thompson's a guy that you can pretty much guarantee he's going to get those sort of numbers, and he's going to be available in a lot of formats. The center position. Timofey Mozgov came across from Denver, and up and down is probably the best way of classifying his season. He ended the season 108th in head-to-head per game value, but post All-Star 121. The last month of the season, 172. And there'd be games where he'd go out there and play 18 minutes and Thompson would play 32. And then Mozgov would play 32 and Thompson would play 18. And it was really hard to get a handle on him. He actually ended up averaging less minutes a game than Thompson, 25 to 27, 9.7 points to Mozgov, a better offensive player. We saw him have that big outburst in the playoffs with a career high 28 points, 7.3 rebounds, 1.2 blocks. And where he differs a little bit from Thompson is that he shoots 62% from the free throw line as opposed to Thompson's 64 and a nice 56% field goal percentage. Now, 108th in per game value, I don't think that's a great spot for him, to be honest. I think he probably should still be taken in at the end of 10-team leagues, maybe 120th onwards, and in 12-team leagues. But the way that they used him, it was too inconsistent for me to go, I need to stake a top 100 pick on this guy, because it was like, what are we going to get? Do we get the big performance from Mozgov? Do we get a big Thompson performance? And in the end, we just didn't know. We didn't know what sort of numbers we were going to get from either of those guys. It was frustrating, and it made it hard to own them on a regular basis. Now, Kendrick Perkins came across after being bought out at the trade deadline, and he was his usual useless self. 4.7 rebounds in 17 minutes, 0.6 blocks, 3.6 points. There's very few fantasy leagues where Kendrick Perkins has value. He did finish 337th in head-to-head value, so deep leagues definitely look at him. But apart from that, we don't need to be too concerned about him. Andy Varejão is an interesting situation. He had torn that Achilles, missed the whole season. Now, if he comes back, which he should, he's going to be there with Mozgov and with Tristan Thompson as well. So they're going to have sort of a glut of big men. So Varejão had a per-game head-to-head value of 115th. With these other guys there, with Mozgov there, with Thompson there, with Love potentially back as well, it's going to be hard for Varejão to see that sort of value. He averaged 24 minutes a game before the injury, almost 10 points, 6.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, and 56 and 73. So some good percentages from him as well. It's going to be hard for him to get minutes. I think with Mozgov, Thompson, Varejão, and Love there, hard for him to get those 24 minutes a game again. Now, when he gets big minutes and when he's not injured, he's a great fantasy player. He puts up big rebounds, he scores pretty well, he gets nice blocks, nice steals, good efficiency if he plays the big minutes. It's going to be hard for me to consider drafting him in a standard league, and with his history of injuries, there's no real long-term dynasty value for him either. In case you're unaware, Brendan Haywood still plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He played 22 games at 5 minutes a game, and he offers basically nothing. He is signed for one more season at $10.5 million. That is a big, big contract that he's clearly undeserving of. He has no fantasy impact. With all these other names I've mentioned ahead of him, they're well ahead of him on the depth chart. Now, the Cavs offseason, that's all the players done. The Cavs offseason is going to be interesting. As I said, we've got Dellavedova and Tristan Thompson, restricted free agents. We've got a $4.9 million team option for Timofey Mozgov. You think they'd exercise that? Back to restricted free agents. Iman Shumpert, Matthew Dellavedova, Tristan Thompson. We've got Kevin Love and LeBron James, who both have player options. We expect them both to opt out. I expect LeBron to sign back on with another one-year deal with another player option on it. And Love, we expect to opt out. We don't know what's going to happen. So there's a lot that can sort of change with Cleveland. There's no chance that James leaves, but these other guys like Love, Thompson, Mozgov, Shumpert, Dellavedova, their future's still a little bit up in the air. So we don't know exactly what this situation is going to hold for this team. And there's a lot of key components of this team who it could be potentially moving on, but I would say that they would look to bring most of those guys back, or they would want to bring most of those guys back. Maybe that's the best way of putting that. All right, that's it for this podcast. Don't forget, there's one more left in the season in review series, but the podcasts don't stop. There's going to be a few of them going over the next few days. Make sure that you're listening to, by the time you listen to this one, well, we wouldn't have recorded it yet. Myself, Matt Smith, and Mark Roberts are doing a mock draft, which we're going to be broadcasting live on YouTube as well. So you see the link on the YouTube page so you can watch along live as we record that. It'll be also released as a regular podcast too, but if you're watching live as we do it, you can submit questions to us through the YouTube page on there. So that'll be interesting. Hey, I don't expect anyone to watch it live, but we are going to be doing it. And the reason I am doing it that way is just because of technical issues in terms of getting the guys together for the podcast. It's one of the easiest ways to do it. So I thought might as well broadcast it live as well and just see if there's any interest in that as well. Again, not expecting anyone to watch it, but there'd just be three guys talking, but it will be released as a podcast as well. make sure you are giving us a review on the iTunes or Stitcher store for the podcast. Follow me on all the social media accounts and make sure you're checking out that YouTube channel and subscribe to that and leave some comments on the videos if you so choose. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.